This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
In my 27 years as a Victorian policewoman, I investigated everything from a stolen bicycle to a stolen life. Policing taught me a lot about human nature, which I explore in my podcasts with a variety of fascinating guests discussing the human side and impact of crime, not only on their lives, but mine as well. My podcasts are not suitable for children and some adults for that matter. If you find yourself affected by my subject matter, please contact Lifeline or any other support service or person that you feel comfortable with. My guests provide their recollection of an event or incident, sharing their thoughts and their emotions, but it's theirs and not everyone will agree with them. I understand that and I hope you do too. Thank you.
And it was ironic because when I was in Bali the second time, I actually had a broken leg and I'd gotten a fight the night before I left and flew out of the country. So I got a black eye, broken legs, and I'm running around with someone else's name.
For those who missed part one of Dave's podcast last week, I'll just bring you up to speed. Dave Gleeson was a man's man. In 1987 or 88, I think, when I first met him, both of us working at the Carlton Police Station. Dave was a extremely competent, confident and popular policeman who was so very funny and entertaining. And it came as no surprise to me that Dave went on to become a decorated and dedicated high-ranking detective within Victoria Police. And then he joined the Australian Federal Police to work overseas. This all formed part of 37 years in a variety of policing jurisdictions and capacity develop missions in Timor-Leste, Afghanistan and Papua New Guinea, PNG. PNG exposed Dave to several traumatic incidents, as did his time in Timor-Leste and Afghanistan. And that extremely competent, confident, funny policeman, he became a shell of the man that I worked with at Carlton. He was diagnosed with PTSD in 2014 when his bucket filled and where he found it hard to think of a reason to continue. But a stay in hospital and the love of his wife and family made him realise that he could live again, but it hasn't been an easy path for him. Like so many of us, Dave has visions, smells, sounds which trigger him daily, terrible nightmares. But at least he's here with us to experience those nightmares, the visions, smells and sounds, however unpleasant and triggering they are. Had he not sought professional help, he wouldn't have been there to share in the joy of watching his sons mature, playing footy, settling down and becoming fathers themselves. And Dave's now a grandfather. And of course, he's had his wife beside him every step of the way. Dave's written a book about his experiences and mental health decline called The Bucket's Full. So many police and emergency services personnel can relate to those words. I received the book, Dave's book, yesterday, and it's an incredibly powerful read. And Dave doesn't hold back with incidents which obviously contributed to his mental health decline. One particular incident I read about where Dave nearly lost his life, it had me shaking my head in disbelief at the inadequate well, actually unbelievably inept support that Dave didn't receive. Maybe, just maybe, if Dave had received the appropriate care at that incident, immediately after that incident, things may have been a little bit or maybe a lot different. But we'll never know. It's hard not to wonder if sending AFP members overseas to help police forces in other countries combat crime is worth the damage it does to members of our peacekeeping and capacity development programs, as too many, in my view, come back so damaged and damaged beyond repair. This week, Dave shares with us, amongst other things, an amazing investigation he conducted with his great mate, Digger Dorman, where they discovered a human trafficking syndicate and how they were able to identify 27 Chinese women who'd been basically tricked into coming to Timor on false pretenses, ending up working in brothels and not in hospitality or waitressing as they'd been promised. The psychological damage of all those years of policing and exposure to trauma and grief is palpable in Dave's story, in both this podcast and his book. Dave, you're a very special man. And to Digger, rest in peace, my friend. So here's part two of Dave Gleeson. And Dave, you said then about the jobs that he was doing. Tell us about the jobs that you did in PNG. Like you said, there was, if you can, and again, I'm, you know, if you don't want to go there, please don't. No. But we don't people that have never been to PNG, they just don't, me included, I just don't get it.
Are we talking about PNG or the Timor jobs in the end?
I'm sorry, Timor. Yeah. Sorry, I keep going. I don't know why I keep going back to PNG. Yeah, Timor. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, well, in Timor, the job that we, that was very significant and was a really big job for the Timorese to manage and understand, and it was run by myself and Digger, and we'd identified there was these Chinese workers that were being brought over into Timor on the promise of like waitressing and jobs in hospitality. But in fact, when they were brought over, these particular people were taking their passports from them and putting them into brothels. So we worked up our job. We had to do our own surveillance, do our own covert work, shall we say. And now in the end, we got some warrants together and we retrieved, I think it was 37 women from the, yeah.
And 37?
Yeah, 37 Chinese women that were being used or had been tricked into coming into Timor to work in hospitality. But the sad thing, and the sad thing about that is once we, because we handed them over once we recovered them to a international organisation who repatriated over half of them, but there was, in the end, there was, I think there was about 15 or 16 that wanted to stay because they were earning money. So, you know, it's, so that's.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, gee, but, yeah, but what a great job to.
Yeah, and, well, like, there's not many police, I don't think. Like, I've charged now. At this point, I was pretty proud of myself because I was the informant and I got to give evidence and lay the charges in Timor. So I've charged people in Victorian jurisdiction, the federal jurisdiction, Northern Territory, and now in Timor. So yeah, I was pretty chuffed about that.
So you should be.
Mm.
And so the main problem in Timor was, you said that they were all, 80% of the people there were young. What sort of, apart from your the young ladies that were being brought over on false pretenses, what were the other sort of crimes, the most popular crimes, the wrong word, but, yeah, what were the main crimes you're investigating?
They were all crimes against the person, though. A lot of yeah, a lot of serious assaults, you know, like, and they don't muck around when they get angry, you know, with the large machete knives and, yeah. So that was like the main, yeah, offences against a person were probably one of the biggest. And, yeah, and because of the like I haven't been there for 15 years now, so I'm hoping that they are actually a success story in the way the training of the police, and the AFP is still over there training. So hopefully they've improved from the days when we were there.
And Dave, so you went over to Timor because, am I right in saying that the Timorese police just couldn't manage the amount of crime, or they weren't? Why were Australian Federal Police going to Timor?
Well, we were part of the United Nations response to everything that had gone on over there. And like it was a young country because they'd only just been annexed, well, I suppose annexed is the word, from Indonesia. And I think there was the violence, there's the political nature of the country. And I guess it's probably important for Australia to be there because they're so close to us. And there's government requirements, I suppose, for them all to be stable. And, it makes Australia a safer country if they're stable and managing themselves.
Do they, pardon my ignorance, but do they say in Timor, PNG, do they have other police forces from other parts of the world come over to assist in the training or in helping, or is it just really Australia?
No, Timor at the time was at UN, so there was many, anyone that was involved with the United Nations had some police over there. So there was.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's it. PNG is just Australia.
Okay, all right. Tell us a bit about PNG.
Yeah, well, PNG was, man, when I first arrived there, I thought, how good is all this? Because, you could buy decent food. And but the difference being in PNG is we were there as advisors, so we didn't have any policing powers as such. And, our role initially, I would say, probably wasn't really defined, but because we used to spend a lot of time just travelling around to the various stations and, and seeing how I'm just trying to be politically correct, but the police force over there was under-resourced, and with the amount of crime and instability, it's just the powder keg for violence.
Okay. What was the main crime that you witnessed or had in any – what's the main crime in PNG from your point of view?
Again, violence against a person that's extremely, extremely violent. And most of the serious crimes that I was exposed to over there involved knives and – more often than not, they were domestic related.
I was just going to ask, why are PNG people so angry? Why is that any different to anywhere else? I just don't understand that. Again, I'm probably showing my ignorance.
Even though there's lots of, this is only my experience from, it's a beautiful country, as in nice and green. It's got great history, but I think it's fair to say that the country's been mismanaged since the Australia released governance in the mid 70s, and there's just been a downward decline in the social behaviours.
Okay, yeah, righto. So from PNG, just as if PNG and Timor aren't stressful enough, you then go to Afghanistan.
No, Afghanistan was between Timor and PNG. PNG was the end. I didn't complete my mission in PNG because the issues I had, but I did 12 months in Afghanistan and loved it. It was tough.
Really?
Yeah, it was tough.
Yeah.
And, when I say I loved it, I didn't feel all that safe all the time when I was over there. But when I come back and I look back on it, the friendships I made, the things I got to experience. The sad thing is that I think our time there was a complete waste of time, and that's so sad. Given the Taliban taking back over and everything we were working for with all our partner agencies, and it's all wasted. It's all gone now.
That must be, hard to take. The fact that you've gone over there, or, everyone's trying so hard to make it a safer place, and it just hasn't worked, has it?
No, and, for me, I was there 12 months, and our impact probably wasn't great. But when I know that the effort the Australian Defence Force and the amount of lives we lost over there, and the Americans lost, and the Afghan National Police lost, it's just so sad.
Senseless.
I feel now, why? But, and I don't know. I guess there's greater political reasonings, but,
It's above us.
That's right,
Dave.
But, it's really disappointing to see that everything that we went there and we lost Australian lives, and that's probably one of the saddest things about all that is, and I see what great work our Defence Force does in these countries.
Mm-hmm. So, Dave, can we talk a little bit about your mental health? Mm-hmm. So do you feel that you were on top of your game mentally when you went overseas, or were there cracks showing beforehand?
As I spoke of before, I think my time at the end of VicPol, that when I look back now, I was developing issues with anger and ability to concentrate. And then when I left VicPol and did all my initial training and went to the NT, I felt that in some ways I'd been refreshed and recharged. And I actually, I didn't feel too bad, But as circumstances would have it, and later on, they get the better of me.
Mm. I suppose to the point where your mental health declined to the point where you were admitted to hospital. Can you tell us a bit about that?
The first time, after a significant incident in PNG where I spoke about where I was actually shot at and got in a fight with an armed robber who'd stabbed a few people. And things declined from there. I just had to get out of PNG, so I just flew out one day, not telling anyone. And then it took a while to understand what was happening and get into treatment, because initially I was reluctant because I didn't think that I was that sort of person that would let mental health get the better of him. And
I can relate to that,
And I took a little bit of while to accept, and I eventually was put into a program.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
And run by Trauma Vic out at the Repatriation Hospital in Heidelberg. And I was there for 3 months, doing 2 days a week. And that's where I learned to identify what had actually taken place. And, so I was taking medication there and got on top of things, got back to work after, you know, significant amount of time and was working semi-normally. And there was probably – but I still hadn't reached that point where that I'd got on top of things. I then basically relapsed about about 4 years later, and was after a series of deaths of Digo and a death of another good friend in Mel Scott. And at that point I thought, I'm not sick. So I stopped taking medication, and the next thing I know, that I'm over in Bali with an assumed name. And I'm brought back and from Bali and hospitalised at the Melbourne Clinic, where I remained as a involuntary patient for 24 days.
When you say an assumed name, Dave, does that mean that you sort of snuck out of Australia? You just wanted to escape and get somewhere where nobody knew you? Is that
100%, Narelle? And I was using a. Oh, it's just. It's sort of. All, it sounds bizarre, even to me. You know, I was telling people that
it won't sound bizarre
that I was someone else, and like I have a period of this time. Where
it's called disassociation, isn't it, Dave? I think.
And I had a period like I was awake for 70 hours and just drinking and walking around, and it was ironic. Because when I was in Bali the second time, I actually had a broken leg and I'd gotten a fight the night before I left and flew out of the country. So I got a black eye, broken legs, and I'm running around with someone else's name.
Yeah.
But eventually, circumstances happened and they get me back to Australia and I go into treatment at Melbourne Clinic. And since that day, every day, I've taken the medication.
And, you know, there's, again, talking about stigmas, there's a real stigma with taking medication because I know I fought for, it'd have to be 3 years. I wasn't going to take medication. And, you know, taking it has probably been one of my saviours. It's about trusting the people that know and understand, like, say, the people at the Melbourne Clinic or the trauma centre at the Austin. The stigma, that's what stopped me from taking medication because I thought only, pardon me, this is a terrible thing to say, but only nutters take medication. And I didn't think I was that bad, but I was. I mean, I didn't get admitted to hospital, but apparently I was very, very close.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I was the same. Like, I thought, I was that guy, you know, went 10 years into the job, but, you know, you thought you were bulletproof, you could go and do stuff and you didn't understand why someone was reacting the way that they were over something. And then later on, you stand there with the prospect that you're that person, you know. And then getting onto the medication wasn't easy, but I got no doubt I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for the medication and the treatment that I received.
Wow. So I was just going to say, so what is it that made you realise that you were a worthy person and you did really need to stick around in this world? But a lot of that, apart from, you know, the love and support of your family and some professionals, a lot of it would have been due to medication. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Well, my lowest point was I had again taken off, and this is in between the two hospitalisations. I'd gone over to Bali and I'd already made my plan. And I sat on the beach that morning and I was speaking to one of the Balinese barmen that I'd known. And yeah, we were talking and he was talking about it, I think he picked up that I wasn't the normal me because he'd seen me there many times. And we were chatting on the beach and I had a pocket full of sleeping pills. And, and it was just his philosophy on life and then talking about his young kids. And then I sort of realised the love I had for my kids that was going to be gone. It was, things happened after that, but eventually I took the right road and I've kept pushing on.
You know, I've always remembered I interviewed Tim Peck. You know, do you remember Pecky?
I know of him. I don't know him personally.
Yeah, yeah. I interviewed him and a while ago now, and he said the same thing, that at his lowest he'd organised, you know, how he was going to do it, end his life because he just couldn't stand the stress and the pain and trauma or whatever. And somehow he was saved. I think it was by Ron Idles. Ron found out where he was and went and got him. And anyway, he goes into hospital and he said he always remembers the people in the hospital saying, look, you wanted to, you know, you didn't want to be a burden with your kids or your wife or whatever. But this professional said to him, but did you ever ask if your wife thought or your kids thought that they would be better off without you? And that question really resonated with him because, I mean, I'll say here and now, I've never ever gone to that depth, Dave, and I don't want to. It's so frightening. But I do know that sometimes you think, you know, what's the point, and that you are a burden on people. But thank goodness you spoke to that Balinese man. I hope he knows that because of him.
Jerry, yeah, but he gets a mention in the book again. So,
oh, does he? Yeah. That's nice. Yeah. Thank you, Jerry.
Yeah, thank you very much, Jerry. And Bayou. Bayou's another friend from Bali that I speak of in the book because he's significant in my life now. And
Dave, when did you start writing the book and why?
Initially it started when I was in the treatment at the Trauma Vic because we'd had to do one of the treatment things was write a timeline of incidents that you had been involved in. So, you know, I wrote down that and then I did that. And then each time that I either got hospitalized or was coming out of the thing, I'd start writing out more stuff. And eventually I had all these writings and chapters. And it was for me. And then I think, to be honest, that I thought that was something I could give the family to. So they would understand. And then I asked someone to have a read of it for me and if they thought it was something that I should share with others, and they were supportive of that. So that's why it's now in a book. And again, like I said right from the start of our conversation, is that a lot of my experience from people with the police with PTSD is it's at the end of their careers and it doesn't necessarily have to be, but some I understand are fully that they can't go back. But I was so determined that I wanted to keep going on my policing journey, and I think that was my goal for my treatment, and it's certainly my goal to keep taking the medication because it allowed me to function at an acceptable level.
Dave, You said before that you were okay, and about 4 years later, you had another episode. Let's say, why? What happened for you to have that second episode? Was that after you'd been to Trauma Vic, or?
Yes, it was after Trauma Vic and okay. after the Bali.
Oh, and thing. After the. Right.
Yeah, so I got to a point where I thought I'm better. I'm over this.
I'm over this.
Yep. Yeah. And I started reducing my medication on my own without the consultation of my doctors, and didn't even tell him. And I got to the point where I had stopped taking the medication. And
gee.
At this point, there's a couple of I had to go to three funerals in the 1 week, and then from there it was, it wasn't long after I stopped taking the medication that I went completely batshit crazy, as I say.
Yeah. So there's a message there, isn't there?
It certainly is. Take your pills. Mm.
Yeah, and trust the professionals. And I also say a lot about trusting your instincts, that if you don't think you're travelling too well, you're probably not. And not to kid yourself and get to the point where, let's say, you got to, or even worse, God love Digger, to where Digger went, you can't do it on your own.
And
you tried to do it on your own and you fell down again because you thought you're okay. You know, you just... got to listen, don't you?
Yeah, and that's again, I'm critical of someone referring to my PTSD as being an illness. And
oh, okay. And tell me about
well,
that.
It's not an, yeah. It's not actually an illness. It's an injury that results out of traumatic incidents as exposure. So I get a little bit peeved when someone refers to it as an illness, because it's actually...
Oh, you've probably been a bit peeved with me then. I might start. Actually, that's a very good point, Dave, because it is an injury. Yeah.
That's right. That's the injury, like you can put the Band-Aid over. So you can't see it, but I have that injury and you have that injury and many others have that injury, and we need to acknowledge that first yourself, that you have an injury, and then like when you have a broken bone, you go about things to try and get it fixed so you can use it again. And for me, it was the psychiatrist, psychologist, and medication.
Well, that's a very powerful thing to finish up on. Where can people find your book, Dave, and when?
Well, it's on Amazon, but the best place to get it's through Shopify. So I'll send you a link to, if I don't know where you can share it, but the site is Over, so it's OOVER dash 3877.shopify.com. So I hope people read it for what it is. It is a bit self-indulgent, but it is a memoir, so... I've had people ask me, have you written about me? It's, no, I didn't. But there are articles about other people.
Yeah, but it's not about, as you say, but that's not self-indulgent. How I see that is that you are exposing what a mental injury, please note, I said injury.
Thank you.
What a mental injury can do are to people who ignore the signs or don't do anything about the signs. And I don't think anybody that would and I haven't read the book yet, I will because you're sending it to me, but I don't think anybody that would read that book couldn't think, maybe I don't know, there's something that might be bothering that they think, oh, it's probably bothering me a little bit more than it should. You know, it makes people think, but it's not about, as you say, it's not about other people. Mm.
And can I just to say to Narelle that, like, I only considered myself as an average policeman who had average exposures there's police out there that have had far worse experiences, and they, for whatever reason, they cope okay. There's people that have probably had a lot less, and they don't cope okay. But that shouldn't be the cause of the injury. I mean, yeah, the source of the injury should be treated any different. You know, like to the people that once you've got this particular injury, you know, you've got to seek treatment for it, and you've got to understand in yourself first of all to help yourself, because unfortunately you don't get better from dead.
Yeah, that's so true. And you know, just one other thing you're just saying there, when I speak at places about my mental injury, I put up a slide about my recovery, and the very first point that I make on my recovery is about accepting the diagnosis, because until you accept that there is something wrong or something isn't right, you'll never get better. So, and it took, I don't know about you, but it took me, I reckon, 18 months to really accept that I had a mental injury and that I wasn't okay. And then things started to happen because I wanted to get better. But I was putting my head in the sand for a long time, like obviously you were. But, yeah, acceptance is very, very important.
Yeah, and it's not something you want to happen. Like, I'm sure you would rather not have it, like I wouldn't want to have it. But I've now got to do my best to make sure that I cope and I can be around for the people that care the most for me.
Mm. And thank goodness you are. Mm. It's been an absolute pleasure. I suppose in closing, I just want to, you know, maybe on behalf of everyone listening into the wider community, thank you for the sacrifices that you made in your 37 years, because they're big sacrifices. You helped the community to feel safe and feel protected, and it has come at a huge cost. But there's many people around or have been able to overcome adversity because of you and what you've done to help them. And let's never forget your family and friends who've also supported and loved you. It's great to hear that you're healing, that you're sharing the goodness and happiness that life's bringing you with those who have never left your side. All I can say is good luck with everything, Dave, and to you too, Digger. We love you.
Yep. Thanks, Dave. Thanks very much, Nora.
Thank you. As you've probably noticed, we've moved to a new platform called Acast. I think that's the right expression, I've got no idea. And my previous reviews haven't transferred over. I need reviews. Could you do me a favour and put up a review? And thank you so much for your support and patronage. With your help, I can give you that little bit extra. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time.
That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.